is so important?
Lena never would have sacrificed herself for a simple book, Biola. Not unless it was exactly that important. I trusted her in life, and I'll trust her in this. I'm convinced the Order has the Ars Arcana, and I'm convinced we need it to beat them. Biola's violet eyes were still unsure. If we were truly brave, we could take on the Order without worrying about some stupid book. What chance could they stand against us? Corneli, all of us, for not fighting them.
Dolph shook his head.
Maybe once that would have been true, but now? Magic is dying, and it has been for some time. Away from the old countries, every generation forgets a little more. You've seen it yourself, haven't you? How each generation is a little weaker than the one before it? Maybe 100, even 50 years ago we might have stood a chance, but I wouldn't risk a stand now. No one with any sense would.
So we wait until we are ready. We build our power, she argued. We could take our time, chip away at the Order's power until they're weak enough to defeat.
You don't understand.
He leaned forward a bit.
What I'm trying to do is about more than simply bringing down the Order. If I'm right about the Ars Arcana, it contains the very secrets of magic itself.
We have the secrets of magic. She tapped her chest. It flows in our very blood.
True, but we've forgotten. We could be so much more. The Order wouldn't be able to stop any mages from fulfilling their destiny ever again. We could make this whole country a haven for our kind.
When she continued frowning, he pressed on.
This has become bigger than me. Bigger than what I lost when the Order took Lena from me.
What does any of this have to do with the museum? The book isn't there.
The Morgan exhibit has pieces I need to examine, he said, sliding the exhibition program toward her. John Yu had managed to lift one from the printer where it was being made, so Dolph knew exactly what Morgan had. He knew exactly what he needed. She glanced up at him, a question in her eyes.
Getting into Khafra Hall won't be enough. The Order will have the Mysterium protected by more than a locked door. I'm expecting something like what they kept Lena in before they killed her. Something that would hurt any mages who tried to come close. We'll need to break through that protection, he said, taking the program back from her and pointing to one entry in particular. I think this might work.
She studied the entry doubtfully.
Morgan wouldn't put anything so dangerous, so important, on display, she challenged.
He might if he didn't realize what he had. Dolph argued.
You can't know that for sure. No, of course he didn't know for sure. But it wasn't as though he could simply walk into the museum and examine the piece himself without raising suspicions.
I know enough, and Nibs is optimistic.
Biola studied him with narrowed eyes.
No. There's something more. Something you're not telling us.
If I'm not telling you, then it's not your business to know. Dolph said, his impatience seeping into his words.
But Biola didn't seem to heed the warning in his voice.
You used to trust me, you know.
He let out an exasperated sigh.
I still trust you, Vi. You keep secrets from us.
She shook her head.
You've always kept secrets from us, I suppose. But now I think there's something more. If you aren't careful, you're going to get us all killed.
Are you saying you want out?
He asked tightly. She studied him with eyes as sharp as the knives she had hidden in her skirts. The clock tick, tick, ticked out the seconds as they passed, each moment feeling like one closer to everything unraveling. Lena would have known what to say to soothe Viola. She would have told him if the whole gambit was a mistake. But would he have listened?
Are you saying I have a choice in the matter now?
Biola asked, her eyes never leaving his.
You've always had a choice, he said,
keeping his voice level, his expression placid.
But when you pledged your loyalty and took my mark, you understood the consequences of making it.
Her expression didn't so much as flicker.
I don't need your threats, Dolph. Mark or no mark, I keep my word.
I know that, Viola, he told her. If you don't want in on the Metropolitan job, I don't want you there. Too much is at stake for anyone not to be all in.
He paused, lowered his voice.
We could use your help on it, though.
Fine, she said after another long moment. But if the girl crosses us,
I don't think she will.
Will you give her your mark before?
She asked.
He should. Anyone he let close enough to do a job like this should have been made to take his mark. But with his affinity hollowed out and weak, the marks were pointless. He wasn't sure what would happen, what he would reveal by marking the girl without his magic intact. Viola frowned at his hesitation.
You're too soft on her.
I'm not.
You admire her, she insisted.
She's a talented thief, but
I can see why,
Viola continued, ignoring him.
She's stubborn and too bold.
She reminds me a bit of Lena in that way.
But you're letting your sympathy cloud your judgment.
I worry you trust her for the wrong reasons.
I worry you dislike her for the wrong reasons, Dolph said softly.
What are the right reasons, Dolph?
But when he went to answer, he found that he didn't know anymore.
The Metropolitan. Central Park East. Esta checked her reflection in a glass covering an 18th century watercolor. The disdainful eyes of the wigged man in the portrait stared back at her, and she had the sudden, uneasy sense that he could see right through her. She only hoped no one else could. Ignoring his disapproving gaze, she craned her neck from right to left to make sure that every stray hair was still tucked up into the silk tarbouche, the fez-like hat that all the servers were wearing that night. It was lucky, she supposed, that they were wearing them. She was nearly as tall as most men, and it was easy enough to wrap her chest to hide her curves. But without the hat, it would have been harder to hide her hair and pass as one of the male servers. Otherwise, she didn't doubt Viola would have made an argument for cutting it. The silken pants and long, tunic-like coats, all part of the exhibition's general theme, were a bonus, too. To finally be out of the long skirts she'd been wearing made her feel freer than she had in weeks. Not that the serving uniforms or any of the decorations were even remotely authentic. With the shine of the silk and beaded details that glittered as she moved, the outfit looked more like something from a Vegas show. To her own eyes, she still looked too feminine. There was no disguising the soft skin on her face or her thick, dark lashes, but she knew enough about people by now to know that they only ever saw what they expected, if they even looked at the help at all.
You, boy,
a voice shouted from the end of the hall.
Get away from there.
Esta startled at the voice and turned to find a large, broad-shouldered man in a dark suit coming her way, one of the museum's guards. She stepped away from the portrait and lowered her eyes.
Don't you have somewhere to be?
On my way now, sir,
she said, coughing out the words in a tone lower than her usual voice. She kept her head down and tried to put some swagger in her step as she moved past him. Steady, she told herself. Not much farther now. But as she passed, she felt tendrils of energy reach out and brush against her. Her skin tingled with awareness, and she nearly stumbled from the surprise of it. He's using magic. There shouldn't have been any other mages in the museum. Morgan was part of the Order, and the exhibition would be filled with its members. But the flicker of magic came again as she continued to walk away. She kept her eyes down and moved as fast as she could without looking suspicious, but she didn't relax until she turned out of that gallery into the quiet emptiness of a wide hall filled with statuary. When she was well out of earshot, she cursed to herself and broke into a jog. She rounded the corner and took the steps in a far stairway, two at a time. At the bottom, she turned into a larger sculpture gallery and kept her pace up as she rushed through it.
Leaving so soon?
A shadow stepped out from behind a large urn.
Esta stopped dead, her heart in her throat, and turned to find Nibs.
What are you doing in here? He was supposed to be outside, waiting to orchestrate their getaway. I could ask you the same, he said with a frown. You should be upstairs with the other servers. I vouched for you. I wasn't trying to leave, she said. I was coming to find you. He gave her a doubtful look. We have a problem with the guards. They're mages. His brows bunched over his round glasses as he studied her. You're sure? He asked, suspicious. Of course I'm sure. I know magic when I feel it, and the guy who saw me upstairs, he was using it. She glanced over her shoulder to make sure he hadn't followed. I think he might have been checking me somehow. Nibs frowned. He didn't seem half as concerned as Esta thought he should be. If he was checking for your affinity, he must not be strong enough to find it unless you use it. How can you possibly know that? You're still standing here. The fact that he was right didn't make her feel any better. I thought Morgan was a member of the Order. He's in the Inner Circle, their highest council. Then don't you think mages are the last people who should be here tonight? You're here, Nibs pointed out. I'm here. Yeah, to take the art, not to guard it. Nibs considered that. It could be another team. His brow furrowed again, and he stared off in that half-vacant way he did when he was thinking. But that doesn't feel right. They're working for Morgan? Or the museum? But seeing as how Morgan's on the main board of directors here, it amounts to the same thing. That doesn't make sense, she told him. The Order hates us. True, but it wouldn't be the first time they used us against each other. There are plenty in this city desperate enough to do nearly anything, including working for the Order. He glanced at her. Look at the Haymarket. Corey might not be in the Order yet, but he's trying to get in. He might not be all that powerful, but he's a magus, same as the guards he employs. Even if he keeps his own identity a secret, his people all know who he rubs elbows with. But they think they're protected because they work for him. They're willing to rat out other magus, even though the unlucky ones get handed over to the Order. Esta realized then how much danger she'd really been in that night. That's horrible. Maybe, but you can't really blame them. Corey pays, and he pays well. Bad enough that the Order forces us to live in the worst parts of the city and uses their influence with the public to keep us in our place. But that's not enough for them. No. They still have one weakness. They can't sense magic like we can. But if they turn us against each other, it solves the problem. We didn't plan for this, Esta said. We have to call it off and get out of here. Now, we can come back when we've figured out a different way in. But Nibs wasn't listening. He glanced down the hall toward where the guests were beginning to arrive, his eyes soft and unfocused. Then, all at once, he seemed to come to some decision. No. No, she gaped at him. John Yu's already inside the gallery. Esta went very still. It's already locked? Nibs nodded. And the room is half full of Morgan's guests. We won't be able to warn him, she said, as the realization of how tight a spot they were in sank heavy in her stomach. The second the door's open, he's done. It had seemed simple enough when they'd laid it all out earlier. Without motion sensors or cameras, it should have been an easy job of evading a few guards. Morgan was set to inspect the gallery in his exhibition before the show. Concealed, John Yu would slip in with him and wait until they'd secured the room. There were no windows, no other doors, no way in or out except through the locked and guarded entrance to the next gallery where the reception would happen. At 8 o'clock, Morgan would give a speech, and then the doors to his exhibition would be opened to his guests. By then, John Yu would have cleaned out the room and hidden himself along with the loot. The guests, all the leaders of the city and newspapermen reporting on the event, would be the first to see that Morgan's so-called great exhibition was nothing more than some empty frames and glass cases. All that would be left was for John Yu to sneak out in the confusion. Easy. All the while, Esta would be using the distraction of the robbery to clean out the rest of the guests. Jewels, cash, anything that would embarrass Morgan further. "We have to get him out of there," she told Nibs. Except that now John Yu was locked in a room blocked by a crowd that contained mages playing for the enemy, watching for any sign of magic. When the doors opened, the walls would be bare and the guards would find John Yu, who would be using his affinity to conceal himself. Once they found him, everything could be traced back to Dolph and the rest of his people. "Even if you could get him out, you can't call off this job," Nibs said. "Dolph wants this done, and he wants it done tonight." "There has to be a way." "So we'll have to do it without magic, which means we'll need a distraction," she said, thinking through the plan and imagining what the professor would have done, how he'd taught her to use what was available. "The best we can hope for is to throw them off, to point them away from John Yu and away from Dolph. And we'll need backup if everything goes wrong." "What are you thinking?" Nibs said, curious now, interested. "I think we need Viola," she told him, hoping that the half-baked idea she was formulating on the fly would work, and hoping that Viola wouldn't kill her for what she was about to ask her to do. Clever Thief. Hart made his way through an empty gallery toward the sound of voices ahead. He'd been to the museum before, countless mornings on the free entry days, when he stared at paintings that promised a world beyond the narrow strip of land he was trapped on. Usually, on those days, the rooms would be filled with the chattering of women, more interested in discussing the fashions of the other visitors than looking at the art. So that night, the silence felt like a gift. It transformed the whole place into his own private gallery, allowing him to imagine, just for a moment, that he'd attained the life he'd dreamed for himself. He stopped in front of a landscape, a dramatic vista of glimmering rivers and sky-capped mountains in the distance. Places like that existed. Places that were clean and open, free from the stink of the city with its coal-laden air and trash-filled gutters. He had to believe that someday he would see them for himself. He took a moment more to let the image fortify him, and then he continued on toward his destination. Eventually, the voices grew louder, and he came to the large, airy gallery that held a series of medieval altarpieces. It was currently serving as a space for less spiritual concerns, the cocktail party for J.P. Morgan's many guests. Servers in brightly colored tunics carried trays of champagne to Morgan's guests, who glittered in their jewels and silk. Hart handed his invitation to a doorman, who gave it only a cursory glance before handing him a program and nodding for him to continue. But as Hart passed through the entryway, he felt the warning warmth that signaled magic in the air. It crawled across his skin, tousling his hair as it inspected him. "The guards are mages." It was an unexpected and unsettling development, to say the least. But Hart forced himself to keep walking into the crowded room as though he hadn't felt anything. People without affinities could rarely feel magic the way mages could, so Hart didn't allow himself to so much as pause. Instead, he pulled everything he was inward, locking down his own power with a speed that made his skin go cold. The guards weren't the only challenge he faced in that room. The gallery was filled with a veritable who's who of New York society, bankers from Wall Street and politicians from Tammany, and many of the millionaires who'd built their houses along Madison or Fifth. A few well-known reporters lurked by the far wall, making notes with stubby pencils in their palm-sized tablets as they watched the crowd with sharp, perceptive eyes. Hart recognized Sam Watson, the Sun reporter who'd done a feature on his act the previous summer. The story had helped ticket sales, but Hart hated how it made him feel like an insect on display. He also hated that at least a small measure of his success was owed to the same man who'd made it his mission to write so regularly and viciously about the dangerous magus that might be lurking among the newly arrived immigrants. Seeing Watson that night wasn't all that surprising, but the last thing Hart needed was for Watson to start dropping hints about his pedigree, or lack of one, in front of Jack. Before Hart could turn away, Watson spotted him and began making his way across the room.
"Hart Darrigan,"
he called, extending his hand with a slick grin.
"I'm surprised to see you here."
"Oh," he said, shaking Watson's hand. It would have been easy enough to get rid of the reporter, but with the guards, Hart was forced to deal with him.
"Doesn't seem like your usual crowd."
Watson nodded toward the full room.
"Or maybe you're here as the floor show,"
he suggested with a less-than-friendly smirk.
"I think you're mistaking me for one of the chorus girls you like so much," Hart said breezily,
but he clutched his hands behind his back to keep himself from punching the ass.
"Evelyn sends her regards, by the way."
"Really?"
Watson said, a little too eagerly, but when he realized Hart was only toying with him, his expression went dark.
"How are things in the newspaper business?"
Hart asked before Watson could needle him any more. While Watson was prattling on about his latest editorial, something drew Hart's attention to the far side of the gallery. One of the servers stumbled, nearly running into a man in tails in an attempt not to drop a tray of empty glasses. The man reached out to steady the boy, and when he did, the server's hand dipped quickly into the man's pocket. He watched with interest as the server used the confusion as a distraction, nimbly slipping whatever he'd taken into his tunic. No, not his. Hers. Hart almost laughed out loud. With the shapeless tunic and her dark hair tucked beneath her cap, the girl blended in with the rest of the staff well enough. No one, him included until that moment, was paying any real attention to the people bearing trays of drinks and canapes. But he was paying attention now.
"Would you excuse me?"
Hart asked Watson. He didn't wait for a reply. He was almost halfway to her when he heard his name over the din of the crowded room.
"Darrigan!"
Jack's voice called again, unmistakable this time. Hart turned to find Jack pushing his way through the crowd and lifted his hand in greeting. If he went for the girl now, Jack would probably follow him, so he gave Jack a short nod and gestured toward a server carrying a tray of champagne. After retrieving a glass for himself and a second for Jack, he made his way back through the crush of the room.
"Good man,"
Jack said, accepting the drink.
"Thanks for having me."
Hart lifted the glass in a silent toast as he scanned the room, looking for the girl.
"This is quite the event."
Jack downed the champagne, set the empty goblet on a passing server's tray, and picked up another one.
"Same as always. But my uncle seems pleased. Might even be happy enough to get him off my back for a while."
"Best of luck with that,"
Hart said, barely sipping at the drink as he looked again for some sign of the girl. He didn't see her, which didn't make him feel any better, but he ignored his nerves and pulled on the mask he always wore for Jack.
"Have you had a chance to look at the exhibit yet?"
"I have."
Jack's eyes lit.
"There's at least one piece that looked interesting. One of the Babylonian seals he collects."
"A seal?" Hart asked, trying to picture it.
"A small cylindrical piece, about so big."
Jack held up his thumb and forefinger 2 inches apart.
"It makes an imprint when rolled across wet clay or rubbed with ink. They were often used as signatures, but my uncle tends to be more interested in the ones used as amulets. Most are made from ceramic or stone, but I believe the one I was examining was carved from unpolished ruby. Astounding, really, considering the size of it. But my uncle interrupted me before I could find out for sure."
He scowled.
"Now it's under glass for the foreseeable future."
Before Hart could ask anything else, a drum roll sounded through the room, ending with a sudden crack. A shout of, "Aye!" went up, and the crowd turned almost as one to see what was happening.
"I believe that's the entertainment,"
It'll probably be the only redeeming thing about this bore of an evening, he murmured. Shall we?
After you, Hart said affably, following Jack through the press of bodies to a space where the crowd had moved aside to allow the performers room. A procession was coming through the grand arched entrance of the gallery.
First came two men in the same sort of billowing pants the servers wore, but their outfits were more extravagant, with heavy embroidery and intricate details on their vests and shoes.
They carried wide, flat drums on their hips and were followed by another musician plucking a driving tune made up of minor chords and melodies on a pear-shaped guitar. A figure wrapped in gauzy, silken veils appeared in the doorway, and then she was spinning, dropping the veils as she undulated across the floor until she was in the center of the room. The curves of her stomach and chest were exposed in flashes of skin and then hidden again by the gossamer fabric she whipped around her, and her fingers tapped tiny cymbals to the rhythm of the drums as her hips twisted and snaked.
"Egad,"
Jack said with a laugh as he elbowed Hart hard enough to nearly spill the champagne Hart was holding.
"It's a damn good thing the old man left me in charge of the entertainment, isn't it?"
He tossed back the last of his champagne, licking his lips as he watched the girl dance. Hart couldn't blame him. He was also finding it difficult to take his eyes off the dancing girl. Her costume seemed to hide as much as it revealed, teasing the audience as her hips moved in an almost indecent rhythm. She was the embodiment of a mystery, especially with the bottom of her face covered by a veil that fluttered beneath her strange violet eyes. Viola? Hart looked more closely, awareness prickling. It was Viola. First the girl and now this? It had Dolph Saunders written all over it, and Hart didn't want to be anywhere close when whatever they were planning happened. But how was he supposed to leave so early without making Jack suspicious? In the center of the room, Viola was still dancing. Hart was going to start backing away, using Jack's interest in the performance to his advantage. But when the music changed, she dropped her finger cymbals and, in a dramatic motion, reached behind her back and withdrew a brace of thin, silver knives that glistened in the brilliant electric lights of the gallery. Hart stopped short, watching warily as Viola danced with the knives splayed between her fingers. He'd heard about what Viola could do with a knife, the way she could hit any target from any distance. Whoever her target was that night didn't stand a chance. But then again, neither did she. The second she used her affinity, she'd be found out. Without warning, the drums snapped out a rim shot, and Viola let a knife fly. Swip! It sailed through the air and took a cap off a server's head, pinning it to the wall behind. The room erupted into wild applause, and Jack elbowed him, absolutely delighted at the show. But there had been no spike of energy, no telltale warmth to give away her magic. Maybe her skill with the knives is simply that. A skill, he thought, when none of the guards moved to stop her. As she spun, all eyes in the room were on her, waiting for her next move with the kind of nervous excitement Hart had seen before dogfights or before bare-knuckle matches. It was the desire to see violence done to someone else, to be close to the blade of danger without ever being cut. It wasn't anything Hart himself was interested in anymore. He'd had too much violence and danger in his life already. The only thing that interested him now was what the girl was doing. He saw her then, the only one moving across the room instead of watching the entertainment, inching her way toward the door to the gallery beyond. So that's her game, he thought with sudden uneasiness. In the middle of the floor, Viola was still dancing, now weaving through the room, pulling one of the dour-looking guards into the dance with her gossamer scarf. The other guards laughed, slapping each other as they watched her draw their friend into the center of the room, away from the door he was supposed to be guarding. Misdirection, Hart understood. It was the heart of any illusion, and Viola's was particularly effective. Swip! Another knife sailed through the air, pinning the sleeve of another guard to the wall. More laughter erupted as he tried to free himself. Hart began to move toward the closed gallery, to where the girl was standing with her back to the door, her hands behind her.
Again, there was no betraying energy, no sign that she was using any affinity.
Clever thief.
Talented, too, if she could pick that lock without looking and without magic.
Luckily, she was too busy concentrating on her task to notice him approaching her, but she went completely still when he sidled up next to her.
"Fancy meeting you here," he said, dipping his head low so that no one else would hear.
He was ready this time for the effect she had on him, the talent she had for distracting him when he should most be paying attention. Her eyes widened, but that was the only indication of her surprise.
"Go away,"
she told him, her hand still working behind her. He had to admire the backbone in her.
"You know you can't use magic in here. They have mages watching for it."
"I'm aware," she said, glancing at him. He frowned.
"If you're doing what I think you're doing, you'll never get out of here without it."
"It's sweet of you to think I need saving, but I'll be fine. If you'd be a dear and leave me alone, that is."
"Save you?" he said, widening his eyes dramatically. "Is that what you think I'm doing?"
He inched closer.
"I'm only interested in saving myself. You do what I think you're about to do, and I might get caught in the crossfire."
"Then maybe you should get out of the way." He moved closer, lowering his voice so only she could hear.
"Maybe those men in the dark suits would be interested in meeting you. I'm sure they'd have a few questions about why you're dressed like that."
"I'd be happy to give them some answers," she said too sweetly, batting her eyes at him innocently. "I'm sure they'd love to hear all about a certain magician who has more magic than they realize up his sleeves."
"You wouldn't,"
he said, almost amused in spite of himself.
"I might," she said, but her eyes were laughing at him. "I've decided I kind of hate you, you know."
He found himself smiling.
"I assure you, sweetheart, the feeling is mutual."
"Well then, since we seem to understand each other now, you might want to move." The smile fell from his face.
"Move."
The word was only halfway out when he felt the breath of air as a silver knife flashed between them. It was enough to make him step back. Then the lights went out. A change in plans. Her heart was still pounding from the surprise of having Hart Derrigan materialize out of nowhere. She'd been so busy focusing on the feel of the lock, letting the vibrations from the pick guide her, that she hadn't even seen him until it was too late. Thank God for Viola. Or thank God Viola had only distracted him when Esther was pretty sure Dolph's assassin would have been just as happy to skewer them both. She definitely wanted to earlier, when Esther had explained her plan for Viola to create a distraction by replacing the troop's dancer. She had a feeling Viola didn't forgive easily. Not that she had time to worry about that. The second the lights went out, Esther slipped into the next gallery, leaving behind the gasping, buzzing crowd in the antechamber.
"John Yu," she whispered, "are you here?" "Where else would I be?"
His voice came out of the darkness.
"What is happening? This was not the plan."
"Plans changed," she said, sparking a small flame and lighting the nub of a candle she'd carried in her sleeve. Then she lifted her tunic and removed the clothing she'd hidden there.
"They have mages for guards. If you use your affinity, you'll never get out. Here."
She tossed him the gauzy pants and scarf.
"Loosen your hair and put these on, and be quick about it."
John Yu rubbed the silky fabric between his fingers.
"These are for a woman."
"Yeah, get moving." She took the bundle of objects John Yu had collected and began fastening them beneath her clothes. She wrapped a rolled canvas around her upper thigh and tucked a couple of small carved cylinders into the fabric binding her breasts. John Yu wasn't changing. He simply glared at her.
"You want me to dress as a woman?"
"That's the basic idea," she said, sliding a smaller canvas around her other ankle, fastening it in place with the garter for her socks.
"No," John Yu said, dropping the sapphire silk into a pile at his feet.
Esta turned on him. "We have maybe 2 minutes left before the lights come back on. That means we have less than 2 minutes to get you out of here before we can't. In about 90 seconds, I'll be on the other side of that door and on my way to the carriage out back, and you'll be on your own. You can either get over your fragile masculine pride and put on the damn skirt, or deal with the order yourself." After a moment of stony silence, he began unbraiding his hair, glaring at her all the while. He looked like he wanted to kill someone, and Esta knew he probably could, but he didn't argue as he made quick work of the rest, covering his head and face with the gauzy scarf. It didn't do much to hide his masculinity. If anyone bothered to really look, they would know he was a man dressed in women's clothing. Not that they had any other choice at that point. She'd just have to hope that people would only see what they expected to, or that they wouldn't bother looking at all. "Very pretty," she taunted as she slipped the last item into her waistband. "Ready?" John Yu glared at her. "Maybe relax your shoulders a bit," she suggested. "If you want to get out of here, you need to at least try." "I am trying," he snapped, pulling himself up even taller and broader than before. "We are so screwed." "Okay, well, try harder," she said, adjusting the scarf over his face to cover his scowl. "When you get out there, you need to pretend like you've been there the whole time. Follow Viola's lead." She snuffed the candle with her fingertips. On the other side of the door, the crowd had grown frantic, which was convenient because their noise covered the sound of the latch as they entered the outer room. She made sure the lock caught so it would look like the gallery had never been breached. "Go," she whispered, pushing John Yu into the crowd as the lights came back on. There was a moment of shocked silence before the crowd's voices rose again, louder than they'd been before. Men barked for someone to explain what had happened, and women gasped, grabbing at their jewels to make sure they were all in place.
"If you could give me your attention,"
a voice came from somewhere on the other side of the room, low and male and full of its own importance. But it took a few more tries before the crowd would quiet enough to listen to the man speaking. Nearby, Hart Darrigan blinked at the brightness, squinting as his eyes adjusted to the sudden return of the light. Esta feigned confusion like everyone else as she sidled away from his reach. In the far corner, J.P. Morgan had found something to stand on and was telling the crowd to stay calm, that it had simply been a problem with the power, but it had been solved and there was no reason to worry. The evening would go on as planned. Not quite as planned, Esta thought as she lifted a tray from a nearby cart and made her way through the crowd. Afraid to jostle the items beneath her clothing, she walked cautiously. In the center of the room, Morgan was commanding the musicians to begin playing again, and they immediately launched into another driving tune that was all drums and cymbals. Esta cringed as she saw that John Yu was standing stiffly, his arms crossed over his chest, instead of making an effort to blend in. But no one seemed to notice. A few more minutes, another pass around the room for Viola and the boys, a careful exit for herself, and they'd all be safe. Esta kept her pace steady as she moved ever closer to the arched entrance of the gallery, accepting empty glasses from people who seemed willing enough to forget the momentary darkness now that the lights were back on. From across the room, Viola caught her gaze and gave a subtle nod before she led the troop, including John Yu, beneath the arched entry, out into the museum. Their music faded as they moved away until it stopped altogether. They were out. Now it was up to her to get their haul, and herself, out safely as well, because if she was caught, there would be no one left to help her. She was already halfway to the entry, only a few yards more to freedom, when Morgan began his speech about the collection. His voice boomed through the room as he declared his deep affection for the Ottoman Empire, for their great discoveries in mystical art.
Almost there, Esta thought, closing the final few feet between her and the exit. A little farther. Then someone snagged her arm and she startled, nearly dropping the tray of glasses. She looked over her shoulder to find Hart Derrigan's stormy eyes boring into hers. With the tray of stemware balanced precariously in her other hand, she couldn't shake him off. If his hand moved a few inches up her arm, he'd definitely feel the roll of stolen parchment she'd wrapped there. And especially after that little stunt she'd pulled on his stage, she didn't know what he would do. "Let me go," she whispered furiously. He studied her a moment longer, with eyes that seemed far older than his years. Then he took the glass he was holding and placed it on her tray. "You missed one," he said. He still didn't release her arm. She was trapped. Panic seized the breath in her chest, made her feel as though every heartbeat was a step toward her inevitable end. Morgan's voice was still droning on, but he sounded very far away, like she was listening to him through a long tunnel. It felt like she was stuck in the spaces between seconds, unable to go back and make another choice, unable to do anything to change what was about to happen without putting herself and everyone else in more danger. But the sudden eruption of applause brought her back to herself. The room snapped into focus, and the panic that had strangled her receded to a dull ache. Her mind raced. They were about to open the doors to the gallery. In a moment, they would see that the collection was gone. Once that happened, the museum would be locked down. She'd be trapped, strapped from head to toe with pieces of priceless art. She had to get out before that happened. But he didn't release her.
"Don't you want to see the exhibition?"
he asked, his voice steady. He knows. And now he was toying with her. She glared at him and tried to tug away again, but it was too late. The click of the lock echoed through the room, and the gallery doors opened with everyone watching, waiting to see Morgan's jewel of a collection. A gasp rang out in the crowd as the gallery doors stood open, exposing the ransacked room, the missing collection. The magician glanced over as the news of the theft filtered through the crowd, and then he looked back at Esta. His eyes were curious and, if she wasn't mistaken, more than a little appreciative. She could not be caught. Not now, before she saved the book and retrieved her stone, and not there, in a room filled with members of the Order. With a quick motion, she flipped her tray toward him. Instinctively, his whole body sprang into action. He released her and lunged for the tray to catch it before the glasses fell. But though he'd let her go, the racket of the glasses crashing to the floor caused the people around him to turn. Already another server was coming to help. The mouth of the room was only a few feet away, but dark-suited men were moving to block any exit. She'd never make it unless... Esther knew it was a risk, but she couldn't be trapped. She had to get the art out. She had to get herself out. There wasn't a choice. So she pulled time around her and ran for it. She didn't bother to see whether the guards sensed her magic as she slipped past them and into the hall. She didn't stop for anything, just ran as fast as her feet would carry her down the winding staircase and back through the statue gallery to the service entrance. Barreling past another guard who was frozen in mid-run toward the gallery, she made it out of the museum, into the quiet night, but she didn't release her hold on time. She moved effortlessly through the silent, still world, the bare fingers of the park's trees, so much smaller than in her own time, were dark shadows against the star-filled sky as she passed the knife-like point of Cleopatra's needle. They waved her on as she made her way down the lane to where the carriage was waiting. The others would be gone, she knew, if everything had gone to plan. She didn't release time until she reached the dark body of the carriage. The horses nickered when she knocked, using the rhythm of beats she'd been taught. To her relief, the door opened. But that relief changed to caution when she saw that Dolph sat concealed in the shadows, waiting.
"You have the items?"
he asked as she took the seat opposite him. She gave a nod, and he rapped on the roof twice with his silver-topped cane to signal the driver. With a lurch, the carriage started off, rattling down the cobbled road. The small, dark space felt too close, too confined, with Dolph's long legs taking up most of the room between them. She pulled her legs as far from him as she could and tried to shake off her nerves. He'd taken a risk in allowing her to help them, and everything had gone wrong.
Well?
His voice was low, expectant. She began unfastening the items, taking them from their hiding places beneath her clothes. Dolph took them from her, one at a time, but his expression lit at the sight of a small, carved stone cylinder. He tucked it away in the inner pocket of his coat, like it was something more important than the rest. After a few long moments of silence, punctuated only by the rattling of the wheels and the strained squeak of the seat beneath her, Dolph spoke.
Nibs told me what happened tonight.
He did? Her mouth went dry.
You took quite a risk, going through with things,
Dolph said.
You could have gotten yourself out and left John Yu to his own fate.
She relaxed a little. He wasn't talking about her use of magic. That's true, she admitted. I could have.
You thought about it,
he challenged, his expression unreadable in the dappled shadows of the coach. No, actually. Once I knew John Yu was trapped, it never crossed my mind.
I find that difficult to believe, Dolph said.
Esta leaned forward until her face was lit by the flickering light coming through the small window. She wanted him to see the truth of her words, the sincerity of her intention. Dolph Saunders needed to trust her if she was ever going to get into Khafra Hall. She needed to be on that crew if she was ever going to get close enough to stop the magician and get her hands on the book or her stone. Her only way back was through Dolph. I never considered getting myself out, she told him. You trusted me with this, and I was not going to betray that trust. My only thought was to find a way to get everyone out safely. I did my job, like I promised I would. He considered that for a moment, but his expression didn't change. Instead, he leaned back in his seat, lazily, his fingertips drumming against the silver medusa that topped his cane.
Your job was to fleece the crowd,
he said, his lean face grim in the shadows of the coach. Who said I didn't? She pulled out a necklace, studded with enormous diamonds and emeralds. The stones glimmered as they dangled from her fingertip. Mrs. Morgan sent this along with her compliments. Dolph's finger stopped moving.
Did she?
Esta did let her mouth curve then. Well, maybe she would have, if she had known it was gone. As Dolph took the necklace from her, his expression grudgingly appreciative, Esta didn't feel any sense of victory. Dolph might be pleased, but she couldn't help worrying about what it meant that the magician had seen her. Art Darrigan would know Dolph was behind the robbery, and she didn't know what he might do with that knowledge. And she couldn't help but worry that her use of magic to escape might come back to haunt her. To haunt them all. A damn good trick. It had been a damn good trick. Making all that art disappear in a matter of 2 minutes or so, the lights had gone out, and with none of them using their affinities. But the girl had left a mess in her wake, the least of which was the mixture of leftover champagne Hart was covered in, and the crystal goblets shattered on the floor around him. She seemed to have a way of quite literally disappearing every time they met. It was something to do with her affinity, he knew. He should have been annoyed by her habit of leaving him empty-handed and looking like an idiot, but that, too, was a damn fine trick, and he couldn't stop himself from admiring her for it, even if this time she'd left him in a precarious place. There had been no way around talking to the squat police captain. He stood, dripping and smelling like a cheap clip joint, as he relayed a version of what he'd seen. He could have handed the girl and Dolph and the rest of them over, which would have certainly improved his standing with Jack, but that would have come with certain risks. Considering that the girl knew enough about him to make her dangerous, he hadn't been sure that telling the police everything was the best idea. Better not to be caught in his own net. Better to have something up his sleeve against Dolph Saunders and the girl, just in case. If he'd been smarter, he would have left the minute he saw the girl. He had known something was about to happen, and he should have left instead of trying to find out what she was up to. Now he'd missed his curtain, which wouldn't go over well, considering the talk Shorty had given him the other day. He'd have to do damage control when he got back.
"The papers are going to have a field day with this," Jack said dully as he came up next to Hart. "The whole family is going to blame me, you know. So much for getting them off my back." "It's damn unfair," Hart agreed, pretending more sympathy than he actually felt. "How much did they get away with?"
"Nearly everything of any real value."
Jack glanced across the room to where J.P. Morgan and his son were still in tense discussions with the police chief.
"At least 3 canvases were cut from their frames. Even if they're returned, they'll be irreparably damaged, and all the seals are gone, including the one I told you about."
Then he noticed Darrigan's shirt front and jacket were a mess, stained and damp.
"What the hell happened to you?"
Hart made a show of examining his damp lapels.
"Accident with one of the servers."
"Accident, you say?"
Jack frowned, looking over the ruined jacket.
"Which one was it? I'll look into it, make sure they're taken care of for you."
"Oh, don't bother,"
Hart said, waving it off. The last thing he wanted was for Morgan, or anyone else, to look too closely at him, especially not when they were investigating a crime.
"It happened when the lights went out. I don't think it could have been helped."
"Damn mess,"
Jack muttered. He glanced over at Hart, lowering his voice so no one would hear.
"The head of security told my uncle there were definitely magus involved."
"Oh?"
Hart said, trying to mask his surprise with bored indifference.
"They know that for sure, do they?"
Jack glanced back at his uncle again and then pulled Hart away, steering him toward a quiet part of the room.
"It's something new the director was trying, employing people with, shall we say, special qualities. My uncle and the Order approved of it, if you can believe that. They didn't bother telling me, or I would have told them it was a mistake. As though they'd ever willingly give up one of their own."
"Thick as thieves,"
Hart agreed, eyeing the guards who were still watching the room. He reminded himself that the guards' affinities couldn't be that strong. They would have caught the girl otherwise. Still, it wouldn't do to linger. It wasn't worth the chance.
"Well," he said, clapping Jack sympathetically on the shoulder, "I've already missed my curtain, and I need to get back to explain things."
"I am sorry about that," Jack said with a frown.
Darrigan pasted an easy smile on his face.
"I'm sure when the story hits the papers tomorrow, I'll be able to talk my way out of it," he said.
Jack snagged his arm.
"You don't know how they did it, do you?"
Hart froze.
"Excuse me?
How did they get everything out of that locked room? I watched them secure it earlier myself. No one was in there, and no one could get in there. Not with this gallery filled with people. The lights weren't out for more than a minute or two."
Jack hesitated, eyeing Hart.
"It was a little like one of your tricks."
Cold unease trickled down Hart's spine.
"I don't do tricks," he said carefully.
"You know what I mean. On stage?"
"Those are effects, Jack. Demonstrations of skill. Whatever magic might have been involved tonight isn't any I'm familiar with. And I'm a victim here as much as anyone. Someone managed to take my watch in the confusion."
He held up the empty chain to display the missing pocket watch.
"I know that."
Jack rubbed his hand over his mouth. He looked tired and hungover, and it wasn't even past midnight. He looked vulnerable.
"I'm sorry for dragging you into all of this."
"You know," Hart said carefully, taking advantage of the moment,
maybe you're right. Maybe I could help you with this.
Jack looked up.
You could? Of course, Jack. That's what friends do. They help each other. I don't know anything about the old magic, of course, but you're right. I know how to make things disappear better than anyone. Maybe I could figure out how they did it. I'm not making any promises, but I'd be more than willing to look into the matter.
A desperate hope lit Jack's eyes.
I'd appreciate it, Darrigan. I really would. And if we happened to figure it out, your uncle would appreciate it too, wouldn't he? I'm sure he would. He'd have no reason to keep you out of the inner circle, would he?
Jack shook his head.
And once you're one of them, you could put in a good word for your friend, couldn't you?
Of course, Jack said, understanding. He gave Hart a knowing smile.
It's what friends do.
Hart nodded.
Let me think about it and see what I can come up with, he told Jack. I'll let you know.
Thank you, Jack said, grasping his hand to shake it.
But let's not tell anyone yet, okay? I wouldn't want to get their hopes up.
Or their suspicions, Hart thought, as he took the risk to send a small pulse of his power against Jack's hand. When he released Hart's hand, Jack stared at him for a moment, a little dazed.
I'll talk to you soon, then,
he said, before he turned away, heading toward the ransacked gallery. Hart watched him go, the mixture of the pull of his affinity and adrenaline singing in his veins. He was closer than he'd ever been to hooking Jack and gaining the entry to the order that he needed if he wanted to get the book, if he wanted to get out of the city. But he had to be careful and take his time. There was no room for a single misstep. The girl knew too much. Dolph was too powerful. And if Hart wasn't careful, he and all his dreams could end up as shattered and pointless as the shards of crystal still littering the floor.
Hidden Depths, Bella Strega. Sitting cross-legged on her small cot of a bed, Esta chewed at her lips as she read Professor Lachlan's news clipping again. Once they'd returned to the Strega the night before, Dolph had thanked her again and left her to herself. But Esta hadn't been able to sleep much, not after she checked the clipping. She kept checking it throughout the night, hoping that something would be different. Yes, the letters had stopped wavering, and the words had finally resolved themselves into clear sentences, but that hadn't improved things. The story had changed. No fire. No destruction of Khafra Hall. Instead, the article was a bland piece about a party the Order had thrown to thank their newest member, Hart Darrigan, for apprehending the mastermind behind the Metropolitan Museum robbery, a saloon keeper named Dolph Saunders. Some items were still missing, but the article said that because Saunders died on his way to the prison on Blackwell Island, authorities didn't have high hopes for recovering them, especially since Saunders' crew had scattered, abandoning his saloon and other holdings, which were being confiscated by the city. Of course he'd died, Esta thought as her stomach twisted. To get to the island, they would have taken him out of Manhattan, right through the brink. Dolph wouldn't have stood a chance. None of them would have. Somehow the future had changed. Most likely her being there had changed it. The magician's treachery was even worse now, and she didn't know what other implications that might have. She had to fix it, but she had no idea how. A knock sounded at the door, startling her. Coming, she called as she tucked the clipping back into its protective wax sleeve with shaking fingers, and then slid the small packet down the front of her corset. When she opened the door, John Yu was waiting on the other side. Can I help you? His expression was unreadable. Dolph wants to see you. Her chest went tight. What for? She asked, glad that her voice didn't sound as shaky as she felt. She thought he'd been pleased with her when they arrived back in the Bowery late the night before, but with her unsettling discovery of the changes in the news clipping, she wasn't taking anything lightly.
"It was not my place to ask," John Yu said evenly. "He's waiting in his apartment downstairs."
"Okay," she told him,